catch it, draw it, make it, change it, fix it, make it, save it, share it. Cadis Action. This is the Cadis Action Podcast. Cadis Action.
Hello and welcome back to the Cadis Action Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Ollie, and I am eternally grateful for you joining me again in talk of CAD and theatre. So, I just want to start with an apology. And this is a unique apology because for the first time in a long time, I've been a little bit overwhelmed with work and getting back into the swing of things as the recent announcement of the possibility of opening up and life getting back to normal. So I haven't really had a moment to sit down and have a chat with someone about this podcast and all the topics that we've talked about. So I owe you an apology for the delay, but I promise it is worth it. Today I am joined by someone across the border who has slightly different rules to us, and that's Wales. I'm joined by Darren Joyce of Cardiff Theatrical Services, aka CTS.
Hello, stranger.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Your surroundings are much nicer than mine.
My surroundings? Oh, of course you've never seen the... Let me unplug you from this.
Let's give you a quick tour. And Sarah says hello.
Hi!
Hey, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I really enjoyed the chat you two had, actually. That was really good fun.
Oh, good. Well, I'm taking over the reins for the next one.
Sarah had a really good idea for International Women's Day to do a first podcast. So we're gonna do it.
So I'm going to interview him.
I'm not allowed to know anything, so I'm completely on the back foot. So this is quite fun. So, yeah. The studio.
Cool. So, wow, nice space, Ollie.
So from the entrance, I've kind of put myself in. I've put myself in the corner. We're in a bit of a sorting. Sarah's.
Sorry, this is my mess.
It's really good to have a space that isn't your home, isn't it?
Oh, it's been a complete godsend during this whole thing because my housemate Chris, school worker. So he's been working from home the entire time, and his desk is in the lounge. And so my desk is in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I would never leave my room.
No. And that, you know, that's soul destroying, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not lie about that. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, well, that's good. And so I guess because it's just been you predominantly, you've been able to go into the office as much as you want, really.
Yeah, so the centre locked down by just closing its door because they're electronic fob doors.
Yeah.
And single office. So it's actually, I'm nearer less people here than I am at home. I've just stayed here for lockdown.
Yeah.
And it's worked rather nicely.
Yeah.
But I've managed because I moved in January because I doubled the size of my space because it was looking like I was going to employ someone.
Yeah.
And so I've taken the opportunity. So I've put in my own network in the room. We've now got a server. So set all that up.
Yeah.
And so I've taken it, used the kind of quiet period to decorate, get everything straight, and hopefully have no excuses when everything starts again.
True. And have you sort of kept busy enough over the last sort of year? It is a sort of a year. It is a year.
So been quite lucky with in the first few months, managed to keep a few things going, and then things did go dead. But I had enough left over from previous jobs where I'd built up a reserve to keep going. Because unfortunately, I am one of the directors who pay through dividends. So not much there, but got some, because I've got the studio, got some local grants.
Yeah.
And then I kind of outreached and then I within the building for handyman stuff.
Yeah.
So I've installed everything from wireless routers to door locks to kitchen cabinets, till systems. I've become an expert on Uber Eats. so just doing a bit of everything. And I've now just been put on the contractor list for the company who runs the center as a handyman. So I can do official repairs for them now.
Oh, brilliant.
So kind of a bit of a diversification. And then I'm in the process of doing my commercial drone license. So another feather to kind of go, well, I can go to site, take a top-down shot, do some planning shots and show what the site's going to look like post. Yeah. So, yeah, trying to stick true to what I want to do, but also kind of going, I've got to be able to do more to realistically.
Yeah. And also have that extra capacity should it happen again. Just because it happened once doesn't mean that it might not happen again within our working lifetime. So
100%.
It's really interesting, that part of it.
How's CTS doing?
We're good. You know, there's work out there. We've got a big Glyndebourne project going out in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, and a succession of other projects sort of following after that. We've had a couple that have sat in the shop since before lockdown, and they were going to go out in January, and then go out in March, and they're currently going out in June, and you know, we're sort of kind of hoping that they will go out because we've provided quite a lot of free storage.
Yes, I was going to say, where do you get to the point where we've done 6 months free, we now need to do something?
Well, we tried that. We had a few of those conversations, and it would have been less emotional had I gone out and shot their mothers.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
It's really weird. You go, this is not an emotional decision. This is a commercial decision to a commercial producer, and the reaction was astounding.
Because I was quite surprised, because I finished six before this kind of went into full swing.
Yeah.
And I half expected, I was worried that they would turn around and go, look, you know, we've closed the show, we've not met the commercial,
yeah,
we need to talk. And to my surprise, they didn't. I was extremely grateful for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's quite difficult. As a scenery company, obviously, you've got product that you deliver. When you've delivered something digital, it's very hard to go, there's value in that sometimes.
Which is
the tough side of things.
Yeah, no, agree. And that's an interesting point you make there about the sort of intellectual value of the work that's done. It's easy to quantify a lump of scenery because, you know, it's got X amount of meters of this, X number of sheets of that, and it took this long to make. It's a different thing in your world for sure. And again, in the theatre world, we're such a sort of lovely, lovely, generous, kind, giving group of people that when you try and go, no, actually this thing has a value and I'd like to be paid for it. There's varying reactions. I was thinking, we both work in a world with creative people, with organizations and businesses that are built with creative people. And I think one of the most interesting aspects of how I've developed whatever it is I do is that reliance upon data and information to make informed choices. And it's sort of taking this very, very scientific approach to things and shoehorning it into a creative artistic environment and going, you know, how can we use all the data we've got from, you know, in a building like the NT as a shared experience, however many times that they built floors for the three spaces. And yet every time you start looking at it, you are analyzing it from scratch. And the only thing that's sort of repeated is the experience of the individual who's doing that bit of work. And I think having switching from AutoCAD to Inventor and seeing how that gives us so much more with the same level of data. You know, we can pull all the data out of an Inventor drawing, whereas you can't pull all the potential information out of an AutoCAD drawing. And it's about how, as an industry, do we use that data, but not to the point where you become completely restricted by it, but
yeah,
in order to enable you, you know, to be as free as you need to be. And I just think, you know, it would, if we used our data properly, we could do things 2 or 3 times quicker. Certainly, you know, costing jobs, which is it's a resource which is paid for, but it's not paid for if you don't.
No, it's not. If you don't get the job, you don't get the money.
Yeah, and how do you take out how can you go down the line of reducing the amount of potential human error by using the data you've got?
Yeah,
and then of course, in between you getting in touch and now, I've also had conversations about the sort of this green book that's being produced for sort of performance and project making and how can we make projects that are more environmentally sustainable. And you go, well, again, that is all about the data we have and how we interpret it, or A, to understand where we're all at currently, and B, to understand where we need to go. And I find that sort of, you know, very geeky world of essentially ones and zeros, and then transforming it into, you know, how do you create a wonderful, you know, piece of scenery that's going to go on an arena tour, or, you know, it's interesting. I just think that it fascinates me.
Or to put it in CAD terms, how to put a spline into a line. It's tough. And I suppose it's interesting. You sit in the position of a commercial scenery builder. And, you know, you obviously get presented from producers, production managers, designers, turn up on your doorstep, forgive the terminology, and go, build this.
Yeah. Or what they tend to say is, can I have a price for building this? And that's the part at which your or our relatively linear, you know, project process needs to kick in. Because what you're doing is you're turning this concept that you've been presented with, either in terms of photos or a physical model, you know, you turn it into numbers. And that could be, you know, the numbers as in the sort of, you know, when does it go out? How many, you know, how many trailers is it being transported on? How many sheets of ply is it going to be? You know, you're sitting there, how many hours is it going to take? And so you're taking this very physical, creative thing, and you are turning it into a sequence of numbers. And I'm really interested to sort of understand a little bit more, talk a little bit more about how that data can actually aid and speed up the process. You know, not just to make our project process a little bit more efficient, but also to enable, you know, producers and designers and project managers to get more for their money, because everyone's working more efficiently with, you know, they're using the tangible data that they have, their experiences, to, you know, to make more informed choices, and also getting some of it out of their heads and having it in a format where, you know, they can use their brains to think creatively, because they don't need to retain all the numbers, because they've actually got them down somewhere. There's a forum or a piece of software that enables them to draw upon that.
Because I think one of the hardest things, particularly with any production manager, when you get presented with a really unique set, where do you start on a costing? And actually, before we started recording, we were discussing both of our experiences at the NT and how, you know, it's a three venue, three floors that very rarely change. And yet each time we were going through the same costing process, of sending it to the drafting department, goes to the draft department, which comes to the construction department. They work, you know, it's already broken up into sheets, but there was no benchmark to go, as a standard, a floor is going to cost maybe $2,000 to $3,000 as your base price. And then we'd look at the paint, and instantly there was no kind of bracketry to kind of go, oh, instantly, you know, that this percentage of your budget is going to be gone just on the floor. And that before you go into the heavier processes and spending a lot of time quoting, that, you know, you're not going to be able to afford it. There's a gut instinct.
There is.
Showing that to create the more creative side of things, they want to see it quantified in that scientific fashion, which is quite interesting. There's no kind of, I trust my gut that this isn't going
to
be.
I trust the experience of the person I'm talking to. You know, you need to be able to back that up with numbers all the time. It's fascinating. I think it is.
And that's where they almost come to our side, and then we're trying to flip it to their side, going, no, it's okay, we can, you know, shimmy this. And that scientific process is, and particularly in the commercial world, as I discovered when I left the NT, it's hard. And, you know, you can get quite emotional about, you try not to be emotional about a quote. You can put days into a quote as a manager of one of these teams. And particularly when it's a big job, when you've put 4 or 5 days into quoting, sitting through, going through all the details to then go, oh, we've gone for another supplier. You don't get paid for the quote. And, you know, that labor time, that cost just has to be absorbed somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's cost of running. And it's tricky. It's hard. And it's hard to get that quantification through to people that it's actually meaningful time.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, you know, as a, you know, this isn't to criticize a production manager, but, you know, if that person's gone out and they've done that with 4 or 5 companies, you know, that production then has suddenly taken 4 or 5 weeks of resource, of which only 25% of it is going to be useful.
Yep.
You know, because you're only going to continue the journey with one of those contractors. And I think, you know, there's definitely, yeah, it's not to say that I don't think it should be a commercial market. I do think it should be a commercial market, but it's certainly there's a lot of resource that, that doesn't end up in the final project that, that someone sees on stage.
I suppose you could argue to a producer that there should be a, you know, there's a lot of talk about this restart, which I briefly mentioned from the production managers forum, of how we can make the industry better. And that's primarily to do with how we spend our time and make our hours more sociable, more kind of 9 to 5, and instead of doing the triple tech day where we're doing 14 hours and ridiculous breaks. I suppose part of that, you could argue, should be, and even in circumstances like this, quantifying the time spent. So, you know, should producers pay a nominal fee, maybe, to, in, you know, show that they've done the quote with you, just so that you get a little bit of, you know, something back for the time. I'm not saying they should pay you thousands of pounds for a quote, but maybe like, oh, we'll pay a day fee for you to put your finger in the air to give us a figure to make it fair.
Yeah, and then if you have collected data over a, you know, a period of time that enables you to be much better informed when you look at a storyboard or a model box for the first time, you know that you can turn that around within that kind of parameter, and suddenly, you know, everyone, it's a much more balanced equation, whereas, you know, it's a really interesting it's not balanced at the moment, because you as you were saying, you know, a company won't get paid for doing a quote on a job they don't win, and it's the same, you know, across all industry. They will need to recoup that cost on a project that they do win. So you could have a situation where, you know, Andrew Lloyd Webber is effectively paying for the costing on another famous producer's project, and you know that feels, you know, a slightly one of the oddities of how we work. But you know, when you get approached, do you I guess there's no sort of tendering process for you as such.
It's really interesting you asked that. It's shifted quite a lot, particularly in the last 12 months. Originally, I would be, you know, you get approached and you go, can you draw this? How long do you, you know, just give us a thing. What's your day rate? Or do you want to do it hourly? Give an estimate. And then I'd update them as it went on and go, well, you've just made this significant change. I think that's going to add about this. I think a lot of the jobs I've got recently, I've either been offered a fee, because obviously everyone's tight on budget, which is fair enough. Yeah. Or I've been asked to do a quote, like, and try and sit down and calculate it. And it's quite tough to quote a CAD drawing. Yes. You know,
yes.
you know me for a while. I've been drawing full time since 2012, as OCT for 2 years. And even in 2 years, if you said to me, how long is that going to take to draw? I've done a project which took me a week to draw, but I worked on it for 6 months with the producing team because they wanted that level of support.
Yes.
So how do you quote the support factor?
Yeah.
You can. It depends on whether you are selling yourself purely as a, I'm just going to draw it and run.
Yes.
And that's a horrible term to use. Don't ever think, you know, thanks, no. Bye. But are you looking for that service, or are you looking for the, I'll draw it, I'll explain it, I'll work with your team to deliver it? Yeah. Which is, and you just don't know unless you've worked with that team many, many times before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it must be a practice that exists within, you know, the world of architecture. You know, architectural studios must be able to offer exactly those distinctions. And it's fascinating. Maybe it's one of the changes that we'll see. I mean, certainly, if we send out a quote on a project, we probably over the last 8 or 9 years have got very much into the habit of going, this is the quote, and there's a separate document that says this is what that quote gets you. And it's amazing even today how many people haven't read that. You know, they'll look at the numbers and you go, that's where it's interesting, because you will sometimes lose a project because you know, an apple has been compared against a pear. It's fine, and we, you know, everyone gets over it and we move on, but it's fascinating how, you know, what's important to some people and what's important to other people, and actually, you know, there's a lot of data there that could sway someone a little bit.
I'm certainly looking at, as we come into the new world, as I'm going to call it, almost like a terms and conditions and kind of a briefing document that goes alongside my quotes, that go, this is what I expect from you, this is what you should expect from me. If there's a disagreement on that, we should talk about it before we sign anything off, because it's, I don't want to cost you and you don't want to cost me. Yeah. We want to protect 90% of the industry. I think it's fair to say 90% is a plucked number, but I'd say most of the industry would look after each other. We're all in this because we love what we do. We're not in this to be, I'd say most people aren't in this to do it for the money. If we were in it for the money, we're in the wrong career.
There's some money in it.
We should be honest, there is some money in it. But if I was sitting here going, I want to retire at 40.
Yes.
I'm not in the right industry to do that potentially. I'm sure there's a way you could do it, but you know, we do it because we enjoy what we do. And I think by nature, we all look after each other because of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's particularly where people like yourself, where we're looking back at the numbers and looking at the historic, where we've changed things and where we're trying new things. And like, for instance, you mentioned that CTS has changed over to Inventor from AutoCAD, was it previously?
Yes. Yeah.
And actually, it sounds as if you're getting a lot more information out of that software comparatively to where the software was before.
Yes.
And that program's historic to the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about theatre drafting, I think certain members and certain books, and I think AutoCAD.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I agree. And it's, you know, Inventor, you know, SolidWorks isn't the right program for the for the theatre industry.
Mm.
Certainly if you're in manufacturing and you're contributing, then actually it is switching over to one of those two more design led programs is definitely the way to go. Because you can remove so much more information from the drawing than maybe you need to. But you know, having said all of that, if you took a theatre ground plan and actually turned that into a three-dimensional drawing and then considered all the potential that you could do with that, maybe there is a world where AutoCAD no longer gives you gives the venue everything that it needs. Going back 3 or 4 years now, we were having conversations about how you could create a virtual model of a venue and put a ground plan and a three-dimensional model of a show in there, and you could have a really, really good look at it and how you might use that tool to eliminate days off a tech.
Mm.
And I think, you know, there's a business case against the outlay and the learning that needs to go against the benefits gained. But, you know, I do think that there's a shift coming. And I think, you know, you've got lots of people looking at it from lots of different angles, which is great because it means that it's got more chance of finding its foothold somewhere.
Mm.
It does all come, it all comes back to, you know, the information you're able to put in and helps the information you can get out.
So I'm going to be slightly selfish and drift you back to the cab because I'm really interested in it. And because obviously I imagine that you had some sort of sway in that decision.
Yeah.
Change it. Make it better.
Much, much slower than that. You know, it took a year.
Okay. National's still on that path. because they've been talking about Inventor for quite a while, but it's a huge shift. In a commercial operation, there's kind of a desire, I would imagine, like, I'll be honest, I'm shifting more towards Inventor. One of my biggest clients, a lot of the stuff I do with them is quite a lot LED driven. So those panels are large files. They're hard to work with. CAD doesn't do it. Inventor does. Huh. Okay. Well, let's use the program that does it. And parametric drawing, steelwork frame generator. The question I get asked all the time by clients is, how much is it going to weigh?
Yes.
And you know, it's a huge question in our industry. You know, can I lift this? Can I put it on a truck? Am I going to hit weight limits? If I have to sit there for 3 hours doing a weight calculation, having totted up my total length of steel, it's not a good use of my time.
No.
Whereas clicking on a button and going iProperties and getting a weight out of it, it's suddenly like, and then you know, the next day the engineer turns around, oh, actually, sorry, we need to upgrade this to 3 mil wall. Just being able to update that and suddenly go, oh, no, it's only added 5 kilos. We're absolutely fine.
Yes.
That's the difference. And I suppose as commercially, it makes 100% of sense. For you guys, it makes sense. But it is a huge transition. And I suppose particularly for myself, it's a learning curve. I've had to do that in my own time to make sure I can keep up with the pace that I need to.
Yeah.
And put in extra hours where I need to. Mm. How have you found that change? And how has that driven your data?
It's
an output.
I mean, I guess, you know, COVID has had an impact.
Yeah,
we bought the licenses in, let's say, November 2019.
Oh, that was a good year. Good year of licensing.
Indeed, yep. And, you know, in March, we shut the shop up for 6 or 7 months. And, you know, because of how we were using the furlough scheme to, you know, retain staff, we had to put the whole thing on a hold. So, you know, it transpired that since we reopened in October, we've got two opera projects running, you know, relatively concurrently, and they're our first two full-blown Inventor projects. And so
you're just stepping into it,
but, you know, what we've realized is that the potential it offers is a much more sophisticated level of scenery building,
yeah,
which needs some analysis. It offers a slightly different level of what drawings are given on the shop floor, what information can be given. You know, the introduction of cutting lists has been a double-edged sword, because yes, it's given us the opportunity to get steel cut independent of the person that's putting the steel together, but actually that time that the person used to spend working through their cutting list was when they got their head into the job. And so, you know, in the way that the drawing office team have had to sort of, you know, reset their mindset, everyone on the shop floor who responds to drawings is also having to just take a little moment and go, right, this is what this means in this new format. But where it's speeding things up for that, exactly, that weight transition is one of the things. We actually, you know, we produce an animation of how things should be assembled. So that, yeah, when things have been manufactured and they go into our assembly area, our fit up area, you know, we could say to the, you know, whether it's an external crew that are coming in or we're doing it in house, this is how the draftsperson has mapped out the assembly method, and actually a 30-second video is so much easier to refer to than some poor idiot standing in front of a group of people going, and then you bolt piece A to piece Z, and, you know, it streamlines all of that. So the gains are sort of in other places.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, no, because one of the things I've been playing with is Inventor into VR as well. Yeah.
Well, yes.
You know, just,
that's exciting.
Just from a sales point of view, because a lot of the stuff people I deal with are visual. So how do you, and particularly when straight off the bat, the material is mapped, you know, and then you can RAL color it, you can texture it, you can do all these things, which you can still do in CAD, but it's a lot more fiddly. It's not as nice. And being able to stick a VR headset on and go, this is the scale of it as you look through your headset, it's quite a change of the way it works.
It's amazing.
And stock components. I've never had to draw a bolt again. And if I just want to change a bolt size, it's right click change.
I know exactly what you mean. And so the gains are subtle. And, you know, that was the tricky bit about writing the business plan for it, because you have to, you know, you have to show the return on the investment. But,
yeah,
you know, we think within 3 years.
I was going to ask what your ROI was going to be. Is it 3? Is it 5? I would have thought 5, but I think it's interesting you think 3. That's quite cool.
I think it's
going to be that quick.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I guess the caveat is I would say 3 years of operational use.
So, yeah, no, that, yeah, no, that's fair. So 2020 was not a thing.
No, it certainly, you know, scuppered it. I mean, in some ways it was good because the drawing team could go quite a long way with it. But, you know, it's that thing where you need to draw in anger to really understand how to, you know, how to get the best out of it. So, you know, it means that someone, you know, if we've got a drawing from someone, we can put it into Inventor. We can, you know, as you say, generate frames quickly. And so, whereas historically we might say it's 10 lengths of steel to build that flat, actually what we can find out really quickly is it's only 8 lengths of steel.
The one thing it hasn't done yet is tell us how many bars are 6.1 and what cutting order to cut the bars in to get that perfect zero wastage affair.
No, indeed. But there'll be some smart person somewhere that will be able to write that program.
I did find an Excel spreadsheet that did it, and I looked at it and made me cry a little bit because it was just so sophisticated, and it was like, it'd take me a day to put in all these numbers and then it would give me the perfect answer.
Yeah.
but was it worth that day to get that perfect answer? And realistically, we want to cut as like many repeat as possible. We don't want to cut like 4 150, then switch to 100, then switch back to 150 on the next bar.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's the other side of our industry. Do these shifts, do these changes in software allow us to be more economical? And I suppose that's one of our biggest arguments. We're more economical in labor, yes, because we've got more information from the get-go leading, yep, into the final stages of the process.
Yes.
We need to now prove that it can save in the materials and the material choices that we make.
Yeah.
And I suppose some of the tools that some software offers, like, I don't know if you guys have touched on the static analysis of loads. You know, can we stick?
Not yet. I'm keeping off it until they can draw.
So I did a bracket recently for someone, and it was like, it needs to take a 5 kilonewton load.
Yeah.
And I was able to show the deflection under that load, yes, to prove, yeah, that. I think I originally drew it up in 10 mil steel.
Hmm.
And I was like, I'm playing it safe. You know, yeah, you do that safe. And then I was like, but we could we do it out of it? I was like, no, quick change, run the analysis.
Down to? 6?
It was 8 in the end. And it came a 0.04 mil deflection.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for what, right, it was doing was absolutely perfect.
Yes.
6 mil, I would have gone, for the size of it, it just looks so tiny. I wouldn't want to build it out of that because it would look so wrong.
That's the thing, isn't it? Again, there's a visual perception of what people find acceptable.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's that in itself can lead you to make, or lead you down the path of making the wrong choice.
Yeah, it's when you start seeing the 3 by 1/2 inch flats because we know they're strong enough, and you're just like, yeah, those shouldn't exist, but we know that, and someone's going, well, I've done that, it's perfectly fine, it's going to do it. And it's just like, you'd never accept it because it would just look so wrong.
It would. I wouldn't, and you know, even as someone who trusts the data, I'm not sure I'd want to be the person walking that flat up.
The beads of sweat. It's
a leap of faith, isn't it?
I suppose, but that's... But someone had to start somewhere at some point, didn't they?
Yeah.
There was definitely and I suppose we're moving into next generation of re-pioneering, so, you know, winches and one of the big things I was talking about recently is this is probably the first time since the war that theatre has been shut down for such a period of time that, and it's the first time we've had sophisticated automation as well. You know, we think about winches, drums, steel bends. We're moving into the unknown, and it's definitely a good time to start pioneering ideas and trying new things, because we're going to have a period of unknown, because we're going to go back into the theatres and turn on the lights. And I know some people have been going in and running things once a month, run a full drum. Imagine what that cable is going to be like. You know, think of some of the set pieces we're building, half ton set pieces. It's just not been done for ever.
No, it's, I mean, you know, it's fascinating. You think of a large revolver that sat static with the weight unevenly balanced on it somewhere. You're going to have some flat wheels.
So where you go, National Theatre drum.
Yeah.
here is your test case for many, many years.
There'll be this circle in the middle of the stages, 1/2 inch lower than everything else.
Knew there was a difference. Just stick a layer ply, it'd be fine.
Yes, yeah, because it's got the capacity to deal with that.
Out of interest, have you had any clients come back to you about anything you might have in a venue that stayed static, or has no one really approached about that yet? Anyone touch base going, oh, do you want to give it a once over?
They haven't. I think it's slightly challenging for us because we're not based in London.
Mm.
So, you know, for us...
Just pop in.
Yeah, exactly, yes, indeed. And you know, at the moment, with the sort of the different countries with their different regulations, there's a sort of layer of trickiness there to navigate as well. And, you know, we do find we're having conversations with clients with about, yes, you can do that in England, but you can't do it here, or vice versa.
Oh, really? I didn't think there was that much of a... Is there that much of a border difference in what you can do?
Not at the moment, but there might be come Friday. Because, you know, the stay-at-home rule that we have here...
Of course, yeah, because you're...
It's relaxed. And so, you know, it's... I think it's fine if you're travelling for work purposes.
Mm.
But, you know, what's essential work and what isn't essential work is, you know, is an interesting thing. So so we don't tend to have a huge amount of scenery that is fully automated that we are responsible for in venues. So more often than not, we've got a lot of stuff on the Prince of Egypt. But the automation behind that has been done by another company. So actually, the moving, in terms of who's responsible for the moving parts, they'll be the ones that that go in and do that kind of servicing. But it'll be something that I'm sure, as people move into reopening, there'll be those checks. Those checks will go on, and what you wouldn't want as a venue manager is to not be able to put an audience into an auditorium because you haven't managed to get your scenery checked out in good time.
That's one of the things, like the liability of scenery when it leaves your shop.
Yeah.
And I think as we go forward, it's going to change as well. People are going to want more for their money to be sure that everything's doing exactly what it says it does.
Yes.
I think it's going to be the interesting conversations coming over the next 12 months of where and how that sits and how long people like CTS want to cover. You said to it, as part of the contract, it needs to last from December to December. Yes. Oh, it's sat for a year. Oh, it's out of our liability now. As awful as that sounds, and I don't mean, trying to be, but we've got to be realistic. A lot of these sets are temporary.
Yes. Absolutely.
And it's different when you're building something to last and the cost relates to that.
Yes.
And the materials.
We're quite resistant to sort of regulation. And I cite the building industry as sort of the exact place we don't want to end up. But actually, because we trade on so much goodwill, that goodwill can be on quite a lot of money at times. It's fine when it's all good. But when it goes wrong, it can get really ugly. We've been fortunate, or I've been fortunate. I've not found myself...
Got some wood there for you.
In those situations, yes, he says. Trying to find some proper wood in the office. But I do know of situations where you've got two organisations who haven't been able to find a way through that, and it can be horrible. It's difficult, and actually it's difficult because we work on a very in a very unregulated way, and that was one of the things that kick-started the sort of scope of work documents that we send out. Because so often, we quote on something and the client would come back with one level of expectation. We've quoted it on a different level of expectation and never the twain shall meet. and so actually by going, these are the numbers and this is what you get from the numbers, we just thought we're going to eliminate that.
Just a clear throughput.
Yeah.
End to end.
There is certainly, in conversation with the Opera House in London, prior to this lockdown, they were definitely moving towards, or they were definitely starting a conversation about the certification of scenery.
Okay.
Where the liability sits, but also, who's responsible for certifying it, and if you're going to certify it, what are you certifying it for? And again, what's the criteria? I think obviously, COVID has put that discussion in that venue on hold, but it won't be long before it comes back again. And I think you sort of work across theatre and other areas, and so you must have come across that kind of regulation.
The most interesting one I had recently was a project in Dubai Airport. So I was working to a completely different standard to what I've ever worked before. Yeah. I was working with a airport level engineering firm. I went to a meeting with the lead engineer by myself and came back to report to the team. And the statement was, we don't sign off anything under M16.
Yes, I remember.
Now, coming from our background, when I go M16, wow, I've had a really bad day if I'm going for an M16. That's like I'm building a main stage revolve system with an adjust, something really engineered. We looked at these things and just went, I can barely fit an M16 anyway. How do you make that work?
Yeah.
So it was a two-part education on our part and their part to kind of go temporary and wave our hands and go temporary. Yeah. M12, look at the forces. We're absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But again, I, you start considering, I suppose as you look at outdoor events like festivals,
earthquakes, sandstorms, wind, rain, tornado. Yeah. I've never thought about a tornado before. I've not done anything in a country with a tornado or sandstorm. Well, I have now. but at the time, you kind of go, those are things. You know, I know we see them on the TV, we see them dramatized in films, but I've never really thought about tornadoes.
No.
It's not a daily current duration.
Where would you start?
M16. we know that survives. Okay, and how big's the nylock on that? But it came around, and it was about, as you say, the communication, the expectations, and in the end, it was you can bolt it down with the M12s that you want to use, and but we will sign it off for a year, and beyond that year, you either have to get us back in to review it and do a visual inspection, or take it down, and at that point you go, well, that's completely fair because.
Exactly.
You've taken that the risk factor within that period is acceptable.
Yeah.
It's like any risk assessment. We need to go through that process again. And you just factor that in with your producers as a cost. And I think scenery firms will likely look to take the same model approach by it, or look to start having their own engineering department on the team that will do that.
I agree. You know, I think, you know, that thankfully is not something that's going to happen overnight. But I think that as you know, if you work in large scale scenery production and you are supplying to places like the commercial West End or Broadway, then that kind of regulation is probably going to be a thing. It might be a slow process, but you know, in the way that, you know, we've gone from a health and safety world which consisted around, you know, a risk assessment, that's now quite a complex area. Rather than it being something that's added on at the end, it's fundamental to the beginning of the process.
It's a definite shift. I always call it the story of the piece, you know. Where do we start, where does it end, and look at its entire life, and how do we make it safer every moment of its life. Because normally I think you might agree with this, when you're moving it from the workshop into the venue, particularly when it's in-house, we won't pick on any particular building, but that's normally the dodgy bit, because you're sticking it on a dolly that's around the workshop to get it around the corner, which doesn't quite fit. Then you stick it on the hoist and swing it around the corner.
Well, I mean, I think that's transferable from, you know, when you take anything from where you've manufactured it to the point of where it's being installed, that is the most vulnerable part, because actually each piece has to be able to stand up on its own. As the company that built it, you know how to move it, but you have to ensure that the group of strangers that are going to, you know, open up the vehicle that it's on, they've also got to have that information in some way.
Yeah, the triple stack white light cases is my personal favorite. Yeah. But once this is all over, I do thoroughly intend to knock down your door and say hello and come and see how your drafting's going with Inventor, because I'd love to compare notes and steal some ideas and possibly trade some in for you.
Absolutely. Sounds great. And I will come and do the same for sure.
So as this podcast comes to a close, I just want to say another massive thank you to Darren for joining me today to chat about all things CAD, CTS and the world. And I hope you really enjoyed it. If you have any suggestions for the podcast, you can, of course, reach out to us at Facebook or at OC Theatrical, on Twitter at OC Theatrical. And you can email us at info@octheatrical.co.uk, and we would love to hear thoughts, words and opinions. If you get a chance, do leave us a review on your preferred platform, Spotify, iTunes, Audioboom, whatever you prefer. Those little reviews help us a lot and we appreciate it.
This is the Cadistaction Podcast. Cadistaction.